Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hey Sawbones. So this is going to be a great episode. Super excited about this guest. He is a lot of the main reasons of who I am and where I am and what I'm doing right now because of him. So this is my program director for my orthopedic surgery residency, Dr. Christopher Nigerian. He is from Metro Detroit. Awesome guy, awesome family man, has four kids. Practiced as an orthopedic surgeon for 45 years, so he's seen a lot of different changes within the orthopedic community. He originally was treating fractures with, you know, traction pins and plaster casts and really not much surgery early on, and then he saw the evolution of orthopedics over the past, you know, five decades, and just an amazing guy. I look at him as a father figure. He has a lot of interesting outside of orthopedic life lessons, the importance of family, the importance of education, the importance of travel, and we discuss all that. So I hope you enjoy. Stay tuned. It's coming up next. Have a great day.
All nurses to the nurses' station.
Lawless country people are real close family. Lately, some of my kinfolk don't get around too good, you see. When that doctor asked them, "Son, how'd you get in this condition?" They says, "Hey, Sawbones, I'm just carrying on an old family tradition." Wanna know, Doc, why do you think I got some pain in my joints? For years of playing hard in this life that's too short. When that doctor asked me, "Son, how'd you get in this condition?" I says, "Hey, Sawbones, I'm just carrying on it all." Tell me all about it, Doc.
Hey, everybody. Dr. Ryan Molly here, and welcome to Hey Sawbones, my story, my passion. This is going to be an awesome episode. I've been off air chatting with my guest for several minutes now. I can honestly say that this individual has helped to shape me probably more than any other individual in my life professionally. He's up there right with my parents in terms of influences, and on a day-to-day basis, there's not a person that I probably quote more or refer to more from just the things that I've learned in my life. So we're doing a virtual one, obviously. I wish I could do this in person so I could share some vino with my guests, but without further ado, I just want to introduce my residency program director, Dr. Christopher Nigerian.
Thank you.
Welcome, Dr. Nigerian. How are you?
Thank you. Great. As long as I'm here is great.
Yeah. So I mentioned when you first got on, I said, "Boy, you don't look any different. You don't sound any different from the last time I saw you," which was a couple years ago. We went out to Einstein Bagels for some coffee and a bagel when we were up there. But you know, the podcast, you were asking me kind of what it is, what we do. Well, it's essentially just a vehicle for my patients and my family, my friends, to kind of really get an inside look at like what makes me tick, the people that helped influence to get me where I'm at, but also to kind of highlight your stories, because that's actually probably the more interesting part for most people, because at this point we're like episode 30 something. People are probably tired of hearing about me, and a lot of the questions have been redundant, but really kind of hear about the really successful people that I've met throughout my life. So can you give our guests, you know, a kind of 2 to 3 minute quick 30,000 foot view of who Dr. Christopher Nigerian is, where you grew up and your family, that kind of stuff?
Well, I grew up in Highland Park, Michigan, and I went to University of Detroit High School, which was an all boys school, which my father sent me to, which I had no plans on doing that. I was going to go to Highland Park High School, which is a public school. Well, that school had all these bright people. You had to take a test to get in there. And in those days, you didn't, parents, when they said you have to do this, you did it. It wasn't like today where, you know, Johnny, do you want to do this or not? You know, in those days you went. So I went and I found that there's a whole group of really super smart people walking around. And I always tell a story. I got 90th percentile on the pre-SAT and I was on the bottom half of my class and it was over 200 guys.
Wow.
From there, I went to University of Detroit and most of the Catholic kids in those days went to University of Detroit. It's not as popular anymore, but Detroit was a vibrant city in the early 60s. And I had a great time there and I met my wife there. And then I decided my dad was a dentist and I didn't want to be a dentist. And Mike Keefe, who was a nephrologist out of Botsford, I knew him because he was in my brother's class in high school. He said, "Hey, Chris, why don't you go to DO school?" I said, "What the heck is that?" You know. Anyways, I did that, and then when I interned in town, I was going to be going into family practice. But then I decided, even then, I said, "I can't know everything about everything. This just seems crazy." And what else do I like? Well, I had been an athlete in high school, and I liked. And I, because of that, I liked orthopedics. The only problem with at that time, medicine, internal medicine, and general surgery were the elite specialties, and orthopedics was not because it was just considered to be just a few surgeries. There was no arthroscopy at the time I started, no MRI, no total joints. It was just basically you hung people up in traction, nevertheless. I decided I like sports. I like radiology. I like neurology. I was all involved in that. The only thing I didn't have was internal medicine, but I decided to do it. And it was pretty primitive in those days. We hung people up in traction. We casted everybody. We did very little open reduction. Shoulder surgery was non-existent basically. Knees, there was no anterior cruciate reconstruction. We did total meniscectomies, which was totally the wrong thing to do because then you had bone on bone afterwards. But then all of a sudden things started to change. I went to a course in Boston on total hips, total joints. And I think it was Harris was there at the time. And some other guys, and I'm forgetting the guy from France. They talked about cementing hips.
John Charnley was the father of hip replacement.
Another guy, the guy that had he had a honeycomb stem, which the bones grew in, and most of the guys thought that was a joke. If I remember his name, I'll tell you. But yeah. Anyway, so I brought back the information to my chief, and I showed him how to do total hips, and then we started doing that stuff. And then I went to a course.
Was that Dr. Simonian?
Yeah, and then I went to a course in Lansing, and another guy up there, I can't remember his name either. I'm sorry, I forget all his names, but I learned arthroscopy.
Was it Herb Ross?
The guy that was taking a course with me was the guy from the sports medicine guy from Alabama. You know his name?
Oh, Anderson.
Not Anderson, Alabama. He's my age now. I think he's still practicing.
Andrews, James Andrews.
Andrews, right, exactly. So he was saying, and he had been. He had been in a prominent practice with another guy that's fairly famous, sports guy. And he said, if he knew, okay. So anyways, arthroscopy, we started with that. We just did diagnostic arthroscopy. We didn't do surgery with it. And then we started with total joints. And then about that point, they started with the, Synthes came in with the plate system to fix fractures. And then the biggest change in the 80s was the idea of rotting femurs and tibias. Close reduction and rotting changed the whole fracture treatment
right.
for those cases. We were always fixing hips. We had the hip screw when I was a resident, which was good. And then we did unipolar hips. And then we started doing bipolar because they got a little better results. Did I hit something? No. Anyways. And since then, shoulder surgery became more sophisticated because MRI became about. This is crazy. And we, yeah. Then we had MRIs, we had CT scans. Those are all new stuff. So what are we going to have in the future? I don't know. But orthopedics has come,
leaps and bounds.
I started with. And now, when I started, nobody wanted to do orthopedics, you know, residents. Now, in the last couple of years, I was program chairman. We were had like 180 applications for two spots. Now, some people are really, you know, doing it in multiple places, but still, right. it was crazy. Now, I think it's and now it's become the most interesting specialty, I think, because you can see your work, you know, what you've done, you know.
Yeah, and, I'm a little biased.
And plus, it's the variety, especially if you do some general orthopedics along with whatever you do, it's fantastic because you're not just doing an eye or something else, but you can do a lot of different things, which I thought was kind of interesting. But it's getting more and more sophisticated, and the knowledge has, you know, tripled and quadrupled. So it's hard to do what I did, which was a lot of general orthopedics, and about 50% was hand and 50% was general. But it's getting more and more difficult to do that because each area is becoming very sophisticated. So, and you know that from
For sure.
It's changing dramatically. Sure. The results are getting better. People have more natural gait, everything else. They can go back to normal activities, you know, barring something crazy. But it's been a great ride. So that was fantastic. The second thing in my career was great was the ability to teach. And
we're going to get into that. We're going to get into that. All right. So, because I've got some great questions for you. What I want to do though is we talked a little bit about this kind of the format. So I want to save most of the time for the end for me to ask you questions. So as I mentioned, 6 questions each. You're going to ask me 3 business questions first, then 3 personal. Then we're going to spin the table, and I'm going to ask you the question. So fire away, business questions first.
All right. Well, how did you? First of all, how do you like practicing in Meadville as opposed to in a large city?
Yeah. So, I mean, I had the opportunity to do both, right? I was in practice in Metro Detroit for about 4.5, almost 5 years. It was where I was comfortable because that's where I did my training. It's where my wife is from. But I'm obviously from a more rural area, Meadville. And when I moved back here in 2015, there was an amazing opportunity to take over a total joints practice where the surgeon was doing about 700 joints per year, which my last year in Michigan, I did about 300. So not quite half of what I did my first year coming here to Meadville. So it was great because I was able to work and operate on people that helped to really get me to where I'm at. So I've done my French teacher's hip replacements, her husband's hip and knee replacements, people from church, some of my best friend's parents, you know, just local family, friends, things like that. So it's almost like a way for me to give back to the people that helped to get me to where I'm at. And to me, it's a comfortable environment because the city life, although I lived it for over a decade, it was, you know, there was so much competition, and not that I shy away from competition at all, but it was an opportunity for me to kind of build what I wanted to build on my own without having to feel like I had 100 people looking and saying, what's he doing? What's he doing? What's he doing? What's he doing? It was kind of like under the radar a little bit.
Right. Okay. Now how did your building work out, that whole, I know you had a cafe in there too, the whole thing, that clinic building. Did you build that or did you buy it? I can't remember.
No, we built it. Yeah. We started it from scratch. You know, it was a process.
How many square feet is it?
So 8,000.
8,000. Okay. That's a pretty good size.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. We,
How many examining rooms do you have?
So I have 9 downstairs. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 upstairs. So 15 exam rooms and 2 x-ray suites, multiple administrative business offices. There's a kitchen, full kitchen for my staff, kind of like a break room. The PAs have their own office area. There's medical assistant areas. The lobby is huge. And what I'll do is I'll actually, Jay, who edits this podcast, he's able to put photos in here, almost like a virtual tour. We can do a little bit of that. But yeah, that was my baby. I designed that very much like your son, Brian. I have a very high interest in architecture and design work. And I'm sitting right here in my basement wine cellar, and I designed all this.
Right. You used to make furniture, as I remember.
Yep. Yep. That? Still do that.
I have to tell you, Maureen brought this up. Do you remember this thing?
House? Yeah, pull it back a little bit.
It's amazing.
Pull it back.
Can you see it?
Yeah, pull it back. There you go. That's your house.
The detail is phenomenal on this. And you took a roof tile or something.
Yep, slate roof tile.
And you painted it, and I can't believe the detail you did on this thing. It's amazing.
So maybe what you could do, if maybe you don't mind.
Maybe you should have been Van Gogh or something. If you're Van Gogh in that surgery.
Michelangelo.
This is amazing.
Could you take a photo of that? And then what I'll do is Jay's going to reach out to you. He can actually incorporate that so it's a little higher quality in there. But yeah, I mean, when I was in high school, I was told I was supposed to go to art school, not medical school.
I think you have that ability. Yeah. Well, Brian was the same way. He's a phenomenal artist. But I think I kind of told him it's hard to make a living. You know, Van Gogh didn't make any money till he was dead. You know, he made all the money. But I just want to say that obviously you're very talented.
Thank you.
Artist and as well as, surgeon. So that's great. But, you know, that's what was so good about the whole program. We had everybody had different talents, but everybody was pretty smart and everybody was really good at doing surgery for the most part.
I mean, to me,
we only had one issue with someone that couldn't do surgery. And you know who that was, and I won't bring that name up.
To me, each day I'm an artist, right? With what I do and the technical skills that I use, there's a lot of precision, right? A lot of people think of total joint surgeons as big mallets and big hammers, and it's just rough work. We don't really do anything precise, but I would argue with that.
Knees, I think, you know, like they used to talk about the robotics and stuff. Well, robotics helps the guy that's not so good with his hands. The guys that are really good don't really need robotics for the most part. At least at that time, they didn't. I don't know. Right. Maybe it's changed. But, the guys that are really good hands could do it.
I don't use any robots. Huh? These are my robots.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
So. All right. You got one more business question. Then we'll go to the personal stuff.
Business stuff. So you're a successful orthopedic surgeon. You're very successful. You built your own thing. In the hospital, I mean, are you chief of orthopedics there, or you have a bunch of guys there, or how's that working?
Yeah. So, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, I operate at Edgewood Surgical Hospital. I'm on the board. Definitely the busiest surgeon there. I'm also the youngest surgeon there, although I'm in my mid-40s, but I meet with, the other business board members on a regular basis to kind of keep the direction of where we're going. We've got some great projects coming up with expansion and things like that. And, you mentioned earlier, you have a pretty good relationship with your administrators. So I said, it's very different because my administrators are not like your classical acute care hospital administrators where their agenda is very different than mine. We're all in the same boat. We're all rowing in the same direction because we have the same goals in mind. Even though 50% of my business partners are not physicians, the other 50% are. And we have a voice. And when I walk in there, there's nothing better in my life than when I walk into my own facility, my own hospital, right? And my staff they know who provides, food for their family and butters their bread, so to speak. So it's a very collegial environment. It's a very warm, welcoming. It's more of like a luxury hotel than it is a hospital. We don't have an ICU. We don't have an ER. We don't have sick patients. We do two types of operations there. We do orthopedic surgery and we do a ton of joints, well over 1,000 joint replacements per year. With myself and my partners and other people, probably close to 1,400 or 1,500.
Do you have a partner in doing total joints?
So I don't have a business partner in the practice, but I have an associate that I actually replaced when I came back to Meadville. He was the guy doing 700. He retired for 2 years, Dr. Frendak, and he actually is a DO. He trained at PCOM. He is in his early to mid 60s. Unbelievable. He's a lot like you. He's in really good shape. He's very academic. He continues to read articles. He's sharing stuff with me all the time. And he trained with Tom Mallory and Adolph Lombardi, who...
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
We have very similar backgrounds like that. He's from this area. He was a high school and collegiate wrestler, a state champion for both. Wow. And so he's...
Why did he retire? So
he was just burned out. He was the private practice president of his group and was just done with it. He's got the best gig now. He works a day and a half a week. He does half day clinic on Wednesdays, full day of surgery. He does 300 joints a year, about 250 to 300.
How old the guy is he?
Early to mid 60s. I think he's about 63, 64.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But great relationship.
You gave him a new lease on life.
Oh, he tells me all the time. He's like, Ryan, I've never had this much fun. And he goes, I can continue to do this at this pace indefinitely. And as long as I enjoy it. And he always tells me, he's like, as long as you want me to be here. And I said, Phil, I love having you here because it's somebody that I can talk to. Like we had residency, our journal club, like in private practice, you don't have that, but I kind of feel like I do have that with him because we share journal articles all the time and we get down into the details and we really both have the same passion and really trying to create that quality of care for our patients.
That's great. I got one other quick question. You had a dream of building a neighborhood of people, healthy people, healthy things. Whatever happened to that?
So that great question. That was called Whole Health Communities. And my best friend and I, who's a real estate attorney in Cleveland, we originally targeted about 60 to 65 properties in the Metro Detroit area because he married a Michigan girl too.
Right.
And the property that we kind of settled on was about 400, almost 500, 490 some acres, almost 500 acres. Okay. It was out by Kensington Metro Park, literally bordered up against it. It was right off of Milford Road and the highway there.
Right.
And, you know, it was 2013, 14, and then 2015, he got a new job at a new law firm in Cleveland. I moved to Meadville. So that dream kind of got the pause button got pushed, but the concept was Whole Health. That's what the name was. It was Whole Health Communities. And then when I just started to start my orthopedic practice in 2017, I asked my best friend, hey, do you mind if I use the name and the concept and the ideas? So not only do I have an orthopedic practice, but it's called Whole Health Orthopedic Institute. We now have a wellness institute where we optimize our patients before surgery. We help them lose weight. We help to get their diabetes under control. We help them to stop smoking. We help them to get their nutrition under control, the people that are malnourished, so that we can optimize them, reduce their risk, and improve their outcomes. And I know you're a little bit of a pessimist with some of this stuff, but I will tell you, I have successfully gotten a lot of people to lose weight. I have successfully gotten a lot of people to stop smoking. I have successfully gotten a lot of people to improve their nutrition because pain is a very strong motivating factor. And if I just tell you, I'm not doing your operation until you, as a participant in this relationship, do these things, they're like, okay, how do I do it? And instead of just saying, lose weight, stop smoking, come back when you've done that, we actually have an institute now, the Wellness Institute, that helps them. I employ three people that help them to do all this.
Wonderful. That's really great. I was not that successful in Madison Heights with my clientele on doing those things. The weight loss thing was virtually impossible for people. And of course, now they got semaglutides, everybody's doing that. But at that time, it was really difficult to get people to lose weight.
Yeah.
Very difficult. And then
I'm not saying it's easy now. I'm not saying it's easy, but
smoking or drinking was another problem. And their famous line they would tell me is, well, doc, you have to have some vice. What the heck is that? You know, so
yeah,
that was always difficult, you know, and I would tell people, especially in the last 10 years of my practice, you know what, you want to get high, why don't you work out? You'll feel really good. And they'd look at me like I was some kind of from outer space, you know. And it's so much easier to, smoke a joint. And a lot of the people were smoking marijuana to do that than go work out at the gym.
Yeah.
And I thought it would be easier for people to to do that. But yeah, the discipline it takes to work out, to exercise is really, I found out to be very difficult for people.
I think it's getting harder and harder too. But
so I think it's wonderful what you're doing. And I think if you're successful at it, God bless you. You know?
Yeah. Well, it's a lot of hard work, but it's a lot of hard work, but I'll tell you, it's a lot more rewarding than me just putting metal and plastic in people. And trust me, I love my day job, but it also allows me to do this at a higher satisfaction rate and a higher success rate because I don't have the deep infections that a lot of people have because they are operating on anybody and everybody.
Right.
So personal stuff, personal questions.
Well, how old are your boys now? And, you know, where are they in school? I know they're getting older.
Yeah. So Anthony is 13. He literally, I think, is either just getting home from a baseball game or will be soon. Santino is 11. He is currently at baseball practice, had basketball practice last night. They're all very active. And then Luca, he's our youngest. He is 8. He'll be 9 later this month. And he is also an avid athlete. He plays baseball. He plays basketball. All three play travel baseball for different. So we're Karen and I are
busy.
Yeah, we're going every which direction. Santino plays travel basketball. So that season is just wrapping up. We've got one more tournament in Sandusky in a couple weeks. But then the baseball will start full swing for the summer. We enjoy it though. I know, you know, you have 4 kids and all your kids were very active and extracurricular stuff. And I have very similar, Karen and I both have very similar.
We just swam, you know, and two of them swam at University of Notre Dame. And now what's happening now, we have 11 grandkids and 5 boys here in town. And now we're doing the same thing now. We're going to baseball game yesterday.
Yeah, but it's fun, right?
Yeah, we enjoy it, but you're, you know, it seemed like it was easier when I was younger to sit there in the stands for, you know, a couple hours, you know what I mean?
Well, I was thinking it would be easier when I was in your position because right now I'm so intense, especially like basketball, because that was my sport. So I coached.
You're not one of those parents that yell, are you?
Well, I was a coach for 3 basketball teams this past season. Two different teams for my middle son, Santino, and one for my youngest son, Luca. And it's hard for me to, because I'm so competitive, especially with that, because that was my sport, that this travel team, my buddy said, we coached, I was a head coach, he was my assistant for the one team. He goes, hey, why don't you be the head coach for this travel team? I'll be the assistant. I said, Jared, I'm not doing it. I was like, I'll do the rec stuff, but travel, no way. The commitment, the this, the that. And quite honestly, I got too wrapped up in it. And it took the fun out of it.
Well, that's the problem. You got to, you know, most likely your kids aren't going to play in the NBA or whatever. You
definitely
want
to
have a good time, you know. So you want, and so you have to keep that in mind. I remember our second child, Natalie, was one of the top 3 swimmers in the state. When she was growing up, under 12 years old, she was super fast. And people come to me and say, wow, she's going to go to the Olympics. I said, no, she's not going to Olympics. Look at my height and look at my wife's height. No way she's going to Olympics.
Yeah.
So let's enjoy it while you can. So you want your kids to enjoy it, but you like to have them good coach, you know, good coaching too, all those kind of things. And that's always a difficulty because When you're, a lot of people don't want to take that job or whatever. So someone's got to volunteer. And sometimes the people volunteering aren't so hot and whatever.
We're pretty fortunate that all their coaches are pretty good. And quite honestly, I've kind of done some self-reflection myself and I'm a much better parent sitting on the sideline than I am a coach. I will say for my son, Santino's 2 basketball teams, we were undefeated this year, both teams.
Okay.
Each team was 9-0. We won the championship for both leagues. But it just took too much out of me. And, you know, we would butt heads and he doesn't really want to listen to me because I'm dad. And so it's better for me to sit on the sidelines.
You know what? You know, there's a fine line between doing that and then burning them out where they say, well, this is just not worth it. You
exactly.
So that's what
I'm officially retired from coaching.
you're always pretty intense, you know.
Yeah.
Anyways. But
what other personal stuff?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, how, and as your wife made the adjustment to Meadville, I know she wasn't excited about moving there to begin with.
Yeah, so we live in Erie. We don't live in Meadville, which is nicer.
Oh, Erie,
not,
okay.
Not that Erie is some major metropolis, but it's a lot bigger than Meadville. I will tell you this. She loves the people here. The people in Erie, Pennsylvania, and just Northwest Pennsylvania are really, really good, salt of the earth type people. Yeah. They're helpful. They're friendly. She's met a really good core group of girlfriends that she'll go out to lunch with. She'll go out tomorrow night. She's going out to dinner with a couple of girlfriends. People from our church, like she's got a nice little place, and she just started going back to work, helping to sub and at the boys' school. So, you know, she's a teacher. She loves working with children with special needs, and that's always been her passion. So,
That's Maureen's sister calling. When she can't get a hold of Maureen, she calls me all the time.
Okay.
Don't worry about that.
I think you have one more personal question that I get to ask you questions.
You're doing a lot of surgery. You're running a practice. You're running a business. Are you taking care of yourself physically? And by that, I mean exercising in a regular basis. Or are you just doing it whenever you can?
Yeah, no, I actually am pretty regimented. That's one of the things that not only you, but just like I've always been a routine guy. So just this week, I was down at the peninsula. I did a 6 mile walk on Monday, 6 mile walk on Tuesday. Sunday, I did resistance training. And then this morning, Karen and I, we have a trainer that comes to our house 2 days a week, and we do weight training with him. So we did that early before I went down to clinic today. So I do weight training at least 2, sometimes 3 days per week. And then I do aerobics, some type of exercise. Unfortunately, I have 2 very arthritic hips, so I can't run anymore. I used to run half marathons.
Do?
Yeah.
Is that familial or is that
FAI? FAI. So femoroacetabular impingement.
You do?
Yeah. I have pretty shallow sockets and pretty big cam lesions.
You're going to have your buddy do your hips?
No, I'm going to get some mirrors. I'm going to do it myself. I just got to get a little bit more practice under my belt. So, but yes, I do take that pretty seriously, because I do feel as though, you know, longevity, not only in my career, but just in my life. And I want to be able to be around for my wife and my boys. And I want to be able to, when I do eventually retire, enjoy life. I don't want to be some obese, sedentary person that has chronic disease. So I do almost every day some type of physical activity for at least an hour.
That's good. That's excellent. But so you got femoral impingement. All right, that's interesting. So what is your plan on the surgery ultimately?
I mean, I'm going to need 2 new hips eventually. I've got about 1 millimeter or 2 of cartilage left superiorly. And I can do the vast majority of what I want to do. I just can't do the high impact like running that I used to. But I can walk. And like I said, I walk 6 miles a pop. And it hurts a little bit, but it's, I mean, I can do it, and it'd be worse if I didn't do it and I gained weight. So I just keep doing it. Got to keep moving, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's the key, I think, to the longevity is diet, exercise, and de-stress. Those are the 3 keys, I think. And, but what I found out was that the discipline it takes to work out, you know, I used to tell the residents, and maybe I didn't tell you this, but, you know, in the later years, I'd say, you know, it's important to exercise all the time. But I said, when you get over 70, it really becomes important, I think. And I followed that. And unfortunately, maybe it's genetic. My mother exercised till she died. She went to 99. And so maybe I have some genetic, personality issues that I got from her that allow me to do that. Because it's hard for people to have the discipline to do this. And you know, the thing is, you can start exercising at any age it'll help you tremendously. The other thing that's interesting, and I don't know if you're familiar with it, is called epigenetics. Are you familiar with that at all?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's where you can, by using, you know, diet and exercise, you can turn on, good genes and turn off bad genes. Yeah. They're studying that right now. So if it's worth anything besides being active, then, you know, I think that it's probably a good idea. And, you know, it's not totally proven yet, but, you know, and that's nothing else. And I'm still skiing now. I just turned 81. I'm just still skiing, and we ski in Vail. And so I want to be active right till the end. So
yeah,
I'm not interested in sitting in a chair and just, you know, wasting away the last years. Right.
So, well, I think it's a great segue. I'm going to spin the tables. I'm going to ask you the same thing, three business, three personal questions, and then, you know, we'll wrap it up. But so business wise, obviously, I know what you do. I know what you did for many, many decades. And you kind of told at the beginning your story about, you know, initially thinking family medicine and then transitioning over to orthopedics. But we talked a little bit offline about the current state of medicine and how the vast majority, I'd say 75% of, I'm just going to speak orthopedics right now, they tend to go into more employed positions, hospital employed, private equity employed versus true private practice, which is what you did for 50 years-ish?
45 years.
45 years. So what was it? Was there a person, or was that just what everybody did back then that you did private practice?
Everybody did back then, but as time went on, I found it to be more satisfying. The problem is you have to hire people, you have to run a business, that kind of stuff. But the freedom you received from being on your own was far better than the control you'd have if you were in a hospital. It would tell you how much time you could take off, what you could, probably what equipment you would use, everything. I made my own choices on equipment, my time off, everything.
Your autonomy.
The freedom of having, doing what I wanted was so important. I think and my son now is practicing in Cape Cod, and he understands that now too, as they've hired people in the hospital where he's working at. He's doing the private practice, and he's immensely successful. And he's, he said, I can see the big difference, So, now some cases you can't do that. If you're working at the University of Michigan, you're going to be employed.
Right.
In many cases you can still do it. Obviously in a smaller town situation, I don't know if you have it over there, but obviously you're probably going to be in private practice more likely, but larger cities,
believe it or not, I'm the only private practice orthopedic practice in Northwest Pennsylvania.
Really?
Everybody in Erie is employed. Everybody in Meadville, there's another practice in Meadville, believe it or not, they're all employed. Wow. And we're the only private practice. And I'm proud of that, though.
Yeah. If you don't have ownership of the practice, I don't think you generally speaking, and it's not everybody, but you don't go out of your way to, all the time to help people out because, you're promoting your own practice, that kind of thing. And I think, I mean, there was many times when I'd be doing surgery at the hospital and someone would call up and needed to be seen. I said, well, send them to the office. I'll be done with surgery at 3:00. I'll take a look at them.
Yeah.
Well, nobody does that today,
Well, we do. We do. Huh? I had a guy that texted me.
Maybe, but I'm saying a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, no.
In a large city. So, or someone, I remember, Bob Blumberg, who was an anesthesiologist at the hospital time. Yeah, my son's having a problem with his wrist or knee, whatever it was. I said, well, just bring him over to the surgery lounge. I'll take a quick look at him,
Yeah.
And then if he needs an x-ray, we'll send him an x-ray. Those hallway consults or whatever, they're kind of gone. Or, for example, if I said to somebody, my dad's having an issue, can I send him in? Yeah, no problem. Maybe you can do that in a small town now. But
yeah, so I actually have a nurse practitioner or a nurse navigator that he has a work cell phone, doesn't bring it home with him, but I give that to all my surgery patients as like the first line of defense so that they don't have to call and leave a message with the front desk or this or that. And yeah. I give that directly to anybody that texts me. They're like, hey, so-and-so just, I had a patient, I did his hip. My daughter just broke her elbow. She just broke her forearm. I'm like, we'll get her into the Erie office later this afternoon. Just Zach will coordinate that visit. I had a buddy that just did it 2 days ago. He was playing basketball and hurt his knee. And I said, we'll get you in tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so great. That's what we used to do, but that's not done here in a large city anymore.
No,
as far as I
know. It's a lost art.
It's a lost art, and and so I don't know where we're going with medicine. I think it's a fascinating field. I mean, orthopedics, I think, is going to get better and better as time goes on. We'll have to wait and see. But maybe artificial intelligence will help some of the research go quicker. Maybe when you need a consult, you'll talk to the computer and they're going to say, I have a patient that's this weight, this, and you know, and they'll tell you what size
these symptoms, and this is your diagnosis. You don't even need an X-ray, and here's your prognosis. And
they'll read the X-ray, and they'll tell you use this size prosthesis, this size cup, this size whatever, this whatever you're going to do.
Yeah,
I don't know. I bet, we think at his age, you I wouldn't do this or I'd do that or blah blah blah, whatever it is. So, I think it's. It's going to be different, but who knows? It sure changed in my 45 years. So
yeah,
50 years it did. Totally different. So it's going to probably be different. The guys used to laugh when I told them about the old days when we used to put people in traction for fractured femurs for 6 weeks and then put them in a hip spike, a cast for another 4 or 5 weeks. They thought that was really barbaric, which it was, by the way.
Well, I mean, what else were you going to do, right? I mean, you didn't have a lot of other options.
That's all we knew. That's all we knew, you know?
So I guess in your 45 years and in your training coming up to your career, is there one person that you can say was, orthopedically speaking, was your main influence, kind of like your mentor that you look to and can say, this is the person that really, or a couple guys that helped get me to where I was in my career?
Not really. I mean, when I hit the residency, it was basically a preceptorship. And a lot of the guys in those days just used the residents to, take care of a lot of work. And we learned a little surgery on the side, but it wasn't an academic situation, which I tried to create. And so I can't point to any one person. I mean, I went to a lot of courses and class, listened to a lot of people, but there isn't anybody in particular I'd say, that because of that guy, Dr. Sloan gave me the opportunity to become a resident, but was he a big influence on me? No, not really. And I can't really point to anybody, so which is kind of sad, really.
Yeah.
So I kind of made it into an interesting situation myself, and when I those Friday afternoon thing, I instituted that before I even took over the program, because I felt that the guys needed more of an academic situation.
So that segues into my next question, which was, all right, I came through your program. I love you like you're my mom or my dad. You were kind of my dad there for 5 years. And I'll tell you, I knew what I was getting into. I knew it was going to be tough. I knew it was going to be grueling. I knew it was going to be intense. I knew you were going to be hard on me as you were everybody else.
Was I really that hard on people?
At the time, right? You're in the moment and you're just like, oh my gosh. But when you look back on it now, retrospectively, I look back on this. Not only do I appreciate who you were and who Dr. Kelly was to me and how you did things, but I also understand it better, and I wouldn't do it any other way. I wouldn't have had it done any other way. So my question is, what you created was unbelievable, right? An academic program. And we talked a little bit about this offline before we started recording. It's different than most residencies now. Like I kind of make it kind of akin to a mentorship or an apprenticeship, but you had an academic component to it where every Friday we would meet, we discuss multiple journal articles. Right. There, and your keywords were always this: critical thinking. You made us think outside the box. You made us have these discussions. The other quote that always comes to my brain is repetition is the branding iron of knowledge. Right. Used to say that all the time. And I tell my boys that. I was like, no matter what it is, if you want to hit a baseball well, you got to hit the baseball often. If you want to do really good knee surgery or hip surgery, you got to do it often. And you got to do it often, but you got to do it well. You can't do it sloppy.
Yes.
Just talk about what you created and how you created it, if you don't mind.
Well, I mean, a lot of it was I learned on the fly on how to teach and that kind of stuff. You know, obviously, the one of the reasons I was kind of hard on you guys at the beginning was I said, you know, if you make a mistake, who's going to forgive you? I used to say that all the time, right? And people say, is that?
I never heard you say that.
Yeah, I did.
I'm kidding you.
I said, who's going to forgive you? And they look at me and I said, well, God will forgive you, but everybody else will sue you if you make a mistake, right? Especially in Detroit, right?
Yeah.
And I said, so we can't afford to make any mistakes, you know? And that's, I impressed that on the residents initially, and I'm surprised I didn't say that to you, but
you did. I was just joking with you. You absolutely said that. Yeah, yeah, and you also told me one other thing.
Mistakes. And I found out that
you said, trust nobody,
you know, in the old days,
remember that?
Pardon me?
You said, trust nobody. And you used to tell me, don't even trust me, Ryan.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, I want you to question everything we do. And you did that. You know, I encouraged the guys to do that, which was a little unusual because most places they rotated to, a lot of guys, you know, were not arrogant, but, you know, they didn't want to hear from a resident. That wasn't typical of a lot of residents. But I felt that you guys are smart. You can read the same books I can, and you come up with a different conclusion on what we should do. I'd like to hear it. And so, I just think that's important that if you take smart people that get their opinions, you know, put them active in the process of doing that. Now, if you don't have smart people, then forget it. It's not going to work. You know, and I found that out early on too. In the old days, they took residents. Just if you hung out long enough, they would take you as a resident. I changed that, and I had an argument with the medical education, and I said, we have to have at least 50% on the boards, right? Before he said, that's terrible. Why are you doing that? Blah, blah, blah. And I said, you got to be kidding me. Now, ultimately, we went up to, you know, 80, 90 percentile, whatever. And I think you were one of the guys we had. We scored 99th percentile on the orthopedic boards, the board exam we take.
Not yeah.
The
board exam. No, I don't say this very often, but you brought it up. I had the highest score in the nation on the written exam my year.
Did you? Yeah. Okay. Well, anyways, yeah, you guys did really, we did well academically, but we were, you know, small hospital out of nowhere, but you did on the board exam, but also, and that
the in training,
the orthopedic mid-year, what was that exam?
OITEs, orthopedic in training exam.
The orthopedic in training, right. We were 99th percentile twice. Yeah. Most of the time we were in the high 80s or low 90s, whatever, which was fantastic. And we did better than anybody in state of Michigan, any residency. And even though we weren't the so-called best, you know, osteopathic hospital.
But a little plug for you, because you did push that so much, is what a lot of people don't realize is we took the same in-training exam as the MDs did, right? So we were taking the same exam that the University of Michigan orthopedic residents were taking, that the same Harvard residents at Beaumont were taking, that the same residents at Michigan State were everybody.
Right. Yeah. And in fact, my son was at Cleveland Clinic. We had higher scores than those guys in Cleveland Clinic.
Yeah, it was the whole country. It wasn't the state of Michigan. It was the whole country.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought that we had to be able to compete with everybody. And we took guys that were smart enough for sure. I made sure, but they had to be all around people. And I used to, you know, and people would ask me, what's your secret about picking people? Because they were able to talk to the nurses, the doctors, when they rotated to other hospitals. The doctors loved them for the most part, everybody. I had people come up to me from different hospitals, doctors, and say, what's your secret? They said, how do you pick these people? I'm sorry. How do you pick these people? Like it was some big secret, you know? And I said, no, we're just picking normal people that are socially can talk to people and they're intelligent. And they're, you know, they're hardworking people. So, you know, I by and large are the residents I had over the 25 years I was the program director were excellent. You know, I mean, there's a few that, you know, could have been better. But by and large, they were really outstanding. I learned just as much from them as I, you know, taught them whatever. So
you mentioned that earlier when we were offline, and there's two quotes that I have heard in the past couple of years that you never said these directly, but they remind me of you. One, we kind of talked about a little bit earlier, and that was you said you got to surround yourself with really good people, really smart people. And right. the quote there, or the concept, I think it's more of a concept than a quote, is you really become the average of the five people that you spend the most amount of time with.
Well, I don't know about that, but certainly I learned a lot from the guys that surrounded me. And the other thing, and to be a little bit selfish, the smart guys make less mistakes. I'm talking about all around guys. Because they're not going to make mistakes. They can handle the family if there's a problem. If there's an emergency room, they can handle it and get people, calm down, whatever the situation, and set up the case for the next day. And they knew how to talk to the patient, tell them exactly what the issue was, what we're going to do. I mean, after a while, they learn what to do.
But you're a product of your environment. That's essentially what that
patient, they say, oh yeah, Dr. So-and-so, Dr. Molly told me all this already.
Great. So my point is you're essentially a product of your environment. If you spend the most amount of your time, and this isn't just during residency, this is your life, with five people, you're going to surround yourself with five people. You want to make those people five really good quality people, successful people.
Absolutely.
And it's going to raise your standard. The second quote was, and I live this, breathe this every single day, is the way that you do anything is the way that you do everything. So if you're sloppy in your personal life with not working out or this or that, you're going to have a tendency to maybe be sloppy in your work. Right. And if you if you're not a detail oriented person here, you're probably not going to be a detail oriented person here. So it's
basically you're undisciplined in your life. And that means your diet, all that kind of things. I mean, cause all those things help you have a clear head. You know, you want to be a clear head going into surgery. You want to have the stamina, to do the surgery. Obviously you're doing a lot of cases. You need stamina to do that. You have to be sharp all the time. You can't be saying, well, that's the last case of the day. I can't, I'm not thinking clearly. You have to be thinking clearly all the time.
Yeah.
And I think you have to, it takes discipline to do that. So, most of the guys we had, all had great discipline. They had great work ethic. It was just an amazing run. And, people said, you miss it? Yeah, of course I miss it. The only thing I don't miss is the stress, right?
Yeah.
As you get older, you have a little more, the stress bothers you a little more. And I'd be thinking about cases at night more than I was when I was younger. And maybe because I knew more things could go wrong. But other than that, I love orthopedics, but I loved even more the association with the residents and teaching the residents and talking about orthopedics, hanging out every day, talking ortho with guys, and then talking about life in general was fun too. So it was a wonderful experience. And, a lot of people say, oh, I can't wait to retire. They had to pull, I retired at 75, but most people don't last that long. And I probably last that long because I had a residence, but I loved it right till the end. And if I could start over again, I'd do it over again. But that's not the way life works,
No, you had a great run. So I'm going to transition to the personal stuff. And my first question is another kind of life lesson that you taught me really outside of orthopedics. It was like, you are a family man. You have four children, lovely wife. Yeah. One of the things that you always said to me, and I do this now with my wife and three boys, is you were very, very big on travel and culture exposing your family to vacations, right? And I'm not just talking like, oh, let's go do something fun. It was always like an opportunity for education and spending time together. And like you treasured that, I remember.
Oh, yeah.
And we do as well.
I'm surprised you remember that. That's true. I said I spent most of my money. I didn't buy a gigantic house or whatever. I spent all my money on education, which I thought was super important. And I had three kids go to Notre Dame and one to University of Michigan. And then
not cheap, right?
A lawyer, huh?
Not cheap.
So, yeah, not cheap. Well, it didn't bother me to spend the money on the kids on that stuff. Now it's gotten crazy, the cost now. But at the time, I thought that was well spent. And all the kids have done well. One son's an orthopedic, one's a lawyer doing really well. One's a nurse in anesthesia, and then one's a mom. But she was in economics, and she married a family doctor who I think is fantastic in California, and he's a concierge physician, by the way, and that's probably what's going to happen to a lot of people, become a concierge doctor.
So I started a branch of that in my practice, by the way.
Yes, and he's giving people the personal treatment because they can't get, their doctor, whatever. So this
is he an MD VIP doctor by any chance?
Yes, MDVIP.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. And anyways, he's doing exceptionally well with it, and he's turning away people. He's a great guy, but part of it's because people want better care, and he can only take care of so many people. So
yeah,
I said you should probably hire somebody else to help you.
Well, you're getting messages left and right there. You're a busy man.
My daughter in California, her daughter's swimming in a league championship, and just sent me
some photos and stuff.
Her results, but getting back to the vacation thing. So I spent money on education and vacation. So every year I would pick a spot and we'd go. We started out going to Toronto, and then we went to up north, and then we went to California, and eventually we went to Europe on a 2-week trip, which was fantastic. And we took Caribbean cruises a lot. We went to the Grand Tetons. We did a lot of trips, and I always thought, it was more important to build chemistry. And by the way, that was an important thing. I didn't mention that as far as the residency, but it was also as far as the family, is building chemistry between the people, between our residents. I thought that was important, and I would have a barbecue, or we'd play golf, or this or that. And you picked up the ball on that because you're one of the best party throwers of any resident we ever had. I'll never forget that. But that was all building chemistry. The guys all generally, everybody liked each other. They liked hanging out with each other. And I remember Danny, I can't forget Danny's
Morris?
Last name, but anyways, pardon me?
Morris.
Yeah, Danny Morris says to me, he says, I really enjoyed that fight. He told me that one time. He said, I really enjoyed the fight. It wasn't, a lot of residencies were painful. He said that I had a great time,
Yeah.
And I think most of the people had a great time, barring a few. Because we enjoyed each other. I encouraged guys to have parties, and you did. And that would all build chemistry. So anyways, getting back to the family, the same thing. I think family is super important to me. And what good is it if I'm a super successful orthopedic guy or even financially or whatever, and your kids are failures? I just don't think that's a good recipe for life. And so I made sure that, I would go to an occasional meeting with my wife just for a medical meeting, but everything else, I always took the kids, and we always, and now at this age, they're in their late 40s, whatever. We get together all the time. We had an 80th birthday party for me. We all met in Myrtle Beach. We had a 50th anniversary. We're in California. And then I visit them twice a year. They come to here twice a year. My daughter's here in town. They call me almost every day. How you doing? What's going on? Blah, blah, blah. So we really enjoy each other's company, and we enjoy their grandkids, and we're just having a ball. And I have new residents. They're all real young now.
Yeah. So,
but I think that's great. You spend time with your kids because they grow up fast, and it'll come back to you, in spades.
Yeah, we did Italy for 2 weeks about a year and a half ago. We took my parents. But believe it or not, my parents had never been out of the country.
Really?
So, and that's where my family's from, my dad's family. So we got to see my grandfather's house that he grew up in. We got to see my great-grandfather's mausoleum.
Are they near Rome or where? Where are they?
Tuscany.
Tuscany. Okay, yeah, I've been there. Yeah.
Yep. And then June... the last week and a half of June and the first 5 days of July, we are going to Greece. As you know, Karen is Greek. So she has family over there, literally 12 minutes from where we're staying for one of the locations. We're going to see them. Then we're going to go to Crete for about 8 or 9 days. And then we're going to go to Athens for a couple of days. So
when they get a little older, when they can appreciate it a little bit, I mean, your oldest one can, but you got to get all the kids kind of a certain age. The great cities of London, Paris, Rome are fantastic too.
We did Rome when we were in Italy. Yeah, we did Rome actually for 6 days. So they got to see all that stuff. We went to the Colosseum. We went to.
It's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah, the Vatican.
I was totally amazed that 2,000 years ago, Rome was a paved city with buildings,
aqueducts,
a government, sanitation system, and aqueducts. And everybody else, if you think about it, there was no Paris, there was no London. Everybody was living in the forest, and these guys had a modern city.
Yeah, we did Pompeii. We did Pompeii as well when we were there.
Did you? Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. It's amazing. I think the Roman Empire was unbelievable.
Yeah. I love history, by the way. I've done several podcasts where I listen to like the history of all the Caesars and Roman history. Yeah. It's just fascinating to me. Like
I agree
how precise 100%. Their engineering was. So like my favorite thing in Rome is the Pantheon. And
how the
heck did they build this domed roof that has no supports inside that has lasted over 2,000 years?
Well, you know, that building outside, it looks kind of nothing special, right? Just bricks and whatever. When you go inside, it looks like it was built 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It was so modernistic. And you're right that the cupola, whatever it was, they supported that by the angle they put them on, whatever. But it looks so modern inside. So how can they do that? How about this? The obelisk in the St. Peter's Square, you know, the Washington Monument there. Caligula stole that from Egypt and brought it over 30 tons and put it back up.
How the heck did they get that from Egypt across the water to Italy? And then like you couldn't, I mean, that would be a major, a monumental thing if they did it today.
I say all the time, I say if Rome hadn't fallen from within, and I think most countries are successful fall from within. We probably had a computer 500 years ago, you know, because they were that far advanced more than anybody else. But human nature is the one thing that never changes, no matter what age, what, you know, 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, 500 or whatever, human nature has always been the same. And, you know, the seven deadly sins, you know, greed, this, that, whatever, they've always been with us, and that people succumb to that. And then you rise and you go down. I hope we're not in a... Yeah.
So another question for you personal wise, again, you've traveled a lot. What is your favorite place that you've ever been to? And if you could like teleport yourself there right now, where would it be and why?
I don't have any, I have a lot of favorites. I enjoyed, Paris. I love Rome. I like the Grand Tetons are spectacular. I even like the southern coast of California, you know, Laguna, Newport area is spectacular area too. Hawaii, not so much. I thought that was overrated, you know, and that's been about it. There's a lot of, every place has some interesting things, and I don't have a absolute favorite, but I did find fascinating history and the beauty. We have places in this country that are spectacular.
Have you ever been to Sedona?
Everybody should go to. Pardon me?
You ever been to Sedona?
Yes.
I love Sedona.
But I couldn't appreciate the crevice in the earth there because my wife said, "You see how beautiful that looks?" I said, "I'm red, green, colorblind." So I said, "What? This looks dark. This is dark to me. I don't see anything unusual about it." And that's an amazing, what did it take, a million years for that to burrow down there, a mile and a quarter or something like that?
I think just all the natural rock formations. And to me, like when I'm there, we've gone there the past three Easters. We spent there with the boys.
Yeah.
We do hikes in the morning and then great restaurants and dinners in the evening. It's like God's country out there to me.
There's a lot of amazing. Yeah, that's a beautiful spot too. Yeah, but
so I guess my last personal question to you is: you've lived a long life, you've lived a very successful life, both personally and professionally. What would you say it is that you are most proud of? A little bit of both, personally and professionally.
Well, I'm professionally just proud of our residency program. Proud of the quality of the residency, the people we had come through there. I'm really super proud of that. Obviously, sometimes you get exasperated, but overall, it was a fantastic experience for me, and I really love that. Personally, I think having four great kids, great wife. I mean, that's been a fantastic, and now we have grandkids that are fantastic too. So family to me is everything. And the teaching, was everything too. So both those things I really enjoyed immensely. And I think anybody that partakes in teaching and you do some of that, you're good at that. It's really nice to leave a legacy of some sort, you know, I mean, we got 45 guys out there that I had some kind of a, interest in their making of their orthopedic surgeon. I think that's just a wonderful thing.
You know, well, 45 to 100, right? Because I mean, 45 to 90, somewhere in between there. Because some years you had two.
Yeah. So I mean, but that's a nice thing to look back on, and you know, I look back on it, and that was. I mean, a lot of people don't have that ability experience, you know. I mean, you're out in private practice, whatever, and that just kept it super enjoyable for me. And the time I spent all those Fridays, you know, I loved it. It didn't bother me at all. I did it for 25 years. I was there all the time, that was just a lot of fun. And so I don't know. I mean, what does that mean? That was me. I just enjoyed it. Some people wouldn't do that, spend the time to do that. But I thought it was important for the guys to learn the orthopedics. And I was happy to spend the time doing it, even though they didn't pay us for the first, 30 years, you know. So, but that was okay, you know. So
I can tell you, I mean, I was just at the AOAO in Vegas. I gave two talks at the adult reconstruction section meeting, but I saw a lot of the guys out there. It was a bit of a reunion.
Oh,
yeah, I saw. Brian Tseng and I, we both lectured. We did a point counterpoint, him and I, which was fun. He's been very, very successful. I would say of all of the residents, he and I, me personally, I've connected and stayed in connection with him more than anybody else, probably because of we both did the same fellowship. We both do the same practice, right? We're adult reconstructive surgeons, and we were pretty close, and we just jived. We very much enjoy each other's company.
He's a nice guy.
Yeah, really, and his wife, Kate's great. When I was out at Colorado Springs for the fall meeting, the three of us, Karen wasn't out there, unfortunately, but I went to dinner with Kate, Brian, and you would think, oh, I'm the third wheel, but like we had a great time. And
we
text each other probably once every 6 weeks and ask each other's opinions on difficult cases and things like that. But I saw him, we ran into Ramsey. We had lunch with Ramsey one day.
Oh yeah. How's he doing?
Ramsey's doing great.
He's not with GIAB anymore, right?
No, he's not. Nope. Him and his wife are in practice together. She's obviously ENT, he's ortho, but they kind of share a staff. Kids are doing really well. I ran into Todd Peterson. I had seen him at the fall meeting too.
He's doing really well. I know that.
Yeah, yeah. He and Mark Fisher, partners, doing well. Mark Allen, ran into him at
Mark
the...
Jones, another great guy. Yeah, they're all great guys. Those guys are great guys, yeah.
Trying to think. Danny Morris was there. I didn't know Danny well because he was quite a bit younger than me. Blake is actually going to be on my podcast, this same podcast, on Sunday.
Blake?
Yep.
Blake, yeah.
Yep.
He goes email crazy. Not email. What is it? FaceTime.
Facebook. Yeah, I'm not on Facebook, but I could see him doing that.
Yeah,
I've stayed in touch with Dave, obviously, Kinesic. Brian Keyes and I a little bit. Ben Keys. A little bit. You know, so who else I saw out there was Chip. Chip, he was quite a bit older than me, and I didn't know him that well, but I would say I spent as much time, if not more, with him this past conference than any of the other residents, and we really enjoyed each other's company.
He realized he was going to be a pediatrician. He just was rotating with me. I said, what are you doing that for?
Well, I was going to be a chiropractor.
Yeah. So I talked him into being orthopedics.
Yeah.
And that was funny. Yeah. We had he was terrific too. He was really good too.
Yeah.
What happened to your old, weren't you in with Beckley? Whatever.
Yeah. Tyler and I haven't talked to Tyler in a couple of years. So, I'm not sure. I think he's married and has a child right now.
Really? So, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting. So. Okay. Well, he was an interesting guy too.
Yeah.
So,
but great guys. I mean, you and Dr. Kelly, I talk about you guys all the time to kind of my team and my staff, and you know, I'll use my Nigerian voice and say little funny stories. I'm not going to share them on the podcast. They're more internal.
Don't tell those stories. Yeah.
But they enjoy them, and they're like, oh, you're doing Dr. Nigerian right now, right? And I'm like, oh yeah, I am. But so I just want to thank you for your time tonight. This is always fun catching up with you, and I wish we could do it in person. Obviously, the next time that I'm in Michigan, I'm gonna shoot you a text.
Or come on over for a glass of wine or something. You
know? Yeah, absolutely. And I'll bring Karen over. I know she always enjoys meeting with your wife and just kind of catching up. But
absolutely, and you know, and keep up the good work. I know you're doing really well. Hope your hips hold out for a long time.
I got a couple more years in them.
Yeah, a couple more years, but it's probably get more difficult to move around. And you know, and aren't the hips lasting a little bit longer now? I mean, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I think the biggest advancement is just the polyethylene, right? I mean, like polywear was the biggest thing. It's just it's almost non-existent now. The polywear.
Oh really?
Yeah.
No kidding. Wow. So that you can do it for the rest of your life then.
I mean, I think you could at least plan to get 20, 25 years easily off of current implants.
Wow.
So
that's great. That's great. And then you're still doing the anterior approach. That's worked out really well.
Do anterior on everybody, even my revision hips. And
oh, really? Okay. Wow.
I do medial pivot knees with kinematic alignment. I just started doing 8 months. So I'm kind of like you where... I don't have the luxury of doing like my Friday morning journal clubs all the time, but I will tell you, I'm constantly, constantly trying to become better at what I do. So I just started doing subvastus surgical approaches for all my knees, and I'm about 8 months in now, and there's a lot to it. I mean, when you talk about patellar instability, you're devascularizing the patella when you do a standard.
Right. You're getting much more detailed into it and more sophisticated. You're getting better balanced knees. You're getting material that's better.
I'm splitting hairs, and I really enjoy splitting hairs.
Yeah. Get more normal function knee. Yeah. You know? And I used to tell the residents too, I said almost everything that I was doing at that time was nothing I learned in residency program. It's changed so dramatically. Now, it hasn't changed that dramatically for you guys, but...
No, but it still changes. I mean, I tell my staff all the time, I say, if I'm doing what I'm doing right now in 5 years from now, I'm doing something wrong, because we got to constantly evolve and change and get better and improve.
Yeah, I know.
So...
But by the time you're 75 years old, it'll probably be something totally different, and the way you do it's going to be different, and it's going to be better and last longer. And people will be able to do maybe sports, whatever, or who knows, more actively or whatever. So
I enjoy what I do, but I don't think I'm going to be doing what I do when I'm 75 like you did. I love it, but it's just the grind of it is just not, there's no way I can, I'm 45. There's no way I've got 30 more years of this.
Well, I told Brian that too. He's doing upwards now to 1,200 cases a year. A lot of them are hand, so they're pretty quick. He's doing carpal tunnels, by the way, making just a little nick in the local. And then he uses the ultrasound, and you can. And he showed me on. You can see the nerve, you can see the tendons, and you see the transverse retinacular ligament, and he makes the cut visually.
Yeah.
Using the thing, so he can do those with no general anesthesia, nothing. So that's a whole big change in just doing that kind of surgery. But.
Right.
I told him that, you know, at some point you're going to burn yourself out because he's doing so many cases. I said, you might like to teach at some point, but you can't do it on Cape Cod. You'd have to move somewhere else. But that would be a nice way to finish off.
Yeah, phase two or phase three, maybe the back. I won't even say the back nine, maybe the back three or four holes. By the way, next week I'm doing a guy's golf trip. You ever been to Nemacolin or heard of it?
No.
It's down south of Pittsburgh, but it's a beautiful golf resort. We're going down there. There's 10 of us. My best friend, the one that we started Whole Health Communities with, he's an attorney in Cleveland. So we're going down there, and I've got a couple of my buddies from here. He's got some buddies from there. So we rented a house. We'll be down there for 3 days, and we're going to have a great time.
Have you practiced at all? I mean, it's kind of frustrating to just go out and play. I mean,
I haven't golfed yet this year. I will tell you, you can't see it right now, but we won our club member guest tournament last year.
Was that because of you or your guest?
Well, my guest is a better golfer than me, but I will tell you that it was a combination. It came together on the last day, and it was like the perfect storm. We just, I'm a not a great golfer, but I enjoy golfing. And I was shooting, I think, 2 over through 9.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic.
So, yeah. And then we just didn't make a lot of mistakes, and we ham and egged it. So we got it together.
Yeah,
and then
ham and egg. Good for you.
We got into the championship. There was 12 teams in the championship, and we ran it and we won it.
You better hold on to that guy.
Well, he's been my partner, and you know who he is, by the way. You've met him at some of my parties. So it's Karen's cousin, Stacy, her husband, Pete. He was at all of our parties. Yeah, if you saw him, you would remember him.
Yeah, I probably would.
So,
yeah, you had the best parties, I'll tell you. I still remember those.
Well, they're going to Greece with us, too, by the way. Their family, because they're Greek, too. So the Theophilus family.
Well, enjoy your trip. That should be. And that's one place I haven't gone to, you know, Athens. And of course, some of those cities are supposed to be spectacular on the coast. But you're gonna that's always fun to do that, you know.
And especially our boys, because like they got to see the Italian culture, like my side of the family. Now they're gonna get to see and experience, especially the cuisine. I mean, gosh, Greek food is amazing. So
Greek food is fantastic, yeah.
But we'll be there for 2 weeks, so we're gonna soak it up.
All right. Well, don't eat too much.
Yeah, well we'll work it off. We'll exercise. So well, right, hey, boss, good. It was great having you on. Let me just do a little bit of closing, all right? So all my guests out there, I want to thank you for tuning in. I want to thank Dr. Najarian for his time. I encourage you to leave comments, suggestions, especially all the previous residents. They're going to be watching this, Dr. Najarian. They're going to have lots of comments and hopefully funny memories and things that they can share with us. But, you know, like it, subscribe it. I'm going to ask you, Dr. Najarian, to share it with your family, your friends, and hopefully this can explode, because I think it will. I mean, you've got a good big crew of your family, so your 4 kids can spread this word so that people can see it and really share the story of like what you have created, because I wouldn't be where I'm at doing what I'm doing if it wasn't for you, and I thank you for that.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I have loved some fishermen in the outdoors where I'm free. It's where I spent my time before I hurt my hip and my knee. When that doctor asked me, son, how'd you get in this condition? I says, hey, sawbones, I'm just a carrying. Tell me all about it, Doc.
As a disclaimer, this podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice from any medical condition they have, and they should seek the assistance of their healthcare professional from any such conditions.